Are they questions of clarity-seeking questions from members? Checking from my screen, I don't see any hand here. So in the absence of any hand from the members, let me thank you, Catherine Kenyon, for availing your time to share this important information with us. Thank you very much. We will move on to Land Free, which is represented by Mr. Christopher Cordeiro. Cordeiro, the floor is yours. The microphone is yours.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to confirm that everyone can see the presentation.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes.
Honorable Chair, members of the committee, of the Select Committee, fellow presenters and members of the public, it is an honor to make the submission on the Bellable. Learn Free has a very simple mission and focus, doing all we can to make education available to as many as possible for as low a cost as possible, and wherever possible. Our core value is that this is best done by promoting freedom in and of education. Freedom of education relates to the freedom to establish education institutions outside the public schooling system, and freedom in education seeks to maximize freedom within the public schooling system. Learn Free works closely with researchers, educational law and policy associations and the non-governmental sector, both locally and internationally, to enhance educational freedom. Two key values that inform our work are subsidiarity and solidarity, or Ubuntu, both key constitutional principles in South Africa. The principle of subsidiarity requires that authority be exercised at the most appropriate level. This does not always mean at the lowest level possible, as is sometimes thought. For subsidiarity not to become the societal equivalent of pull up the ladder, Jack, I'm okay, it needs to be in a dynamic equilibrium with the principle of solidarity. This principle is recognized at one of the deepest levels by the concept of Ubuntu, that it is only by recognizing your humanity and rights that I realize my own rights and humanity. A concern therefore that everyone has ladders, and a fundamental requirement for peace and societal development. Today, I'll provide a brief root cause analysis of the problems in Bellable and explain why, based on our goals and principles, we have to unfortunately reject the Bellable in its current form and request that substantial changes be made to the bill. It is our request that the Select Committee takes leadership and makes the amendments to the bill in line with our submissions and then sends the bill back to the National Assembly. We believe that this will not delay the bill greatly, and that with the support of NGOs and civil society, the amendments we propose could be included in the bill. Bellable is the first major reform of the education system since the 1996 schools SASA was drafted. And SASA addressed the major administrative task of creating one education system out of 17 racially divided departments. But unfortunately, which was of course a highly successful endeavor, but unfortunately, sometimes success breeds its own problems. And a successful transition can be built on an idea, in the memory and culture of an institution that problems are best solved through complex administrative processes. That is, of course, not to say that there's no value to administrative solutions. And there are places where the Bellable provides sensible administrative provisions. An example is Clause 35. Proposing Section 51(6) that allows for a form of deemed registration if a homeschool application is not processed within 60 days. Clause 37, creating a dispute resolution mechanism, is a step in the right direction towards stronger process rights. Although, as was made clear in the South African Institute of Race Relations submission, this should not infringe on the right to access to the courts. Clause 6 that allows for the appointment of persons or groups of persons to advise the minister on curriculum is also welcomed, especially if the minister uses this to reach out to experts in the emerging education modalities such as homeschooling, collaborative homeschooling, independent microschooling, distance education provision, and online and hybrid schooling. These are modalities that are at the forefront of experimenting with curricula and the approaches of the future of education. However, a key question is, does the Bella Bill provide a foundation to meet the looming education crisis that we will face in the next decade? We know that over 50% of our educators will retire. We also know that that meeting the Millennium Development Goals, which set a bold goal of increasing access to basic education, and a goal that South Africa can actually proudly say that we achieved, however, came at the cost of quality, with classes becoming overcrowded. And this is by no means only a South African experience. Population systems in South Africa create a resource allocation crisis. Schools are built in rural areas with libraries, laboratories, and school fields, and then just when they have been opened, they empty out of learners who then move to urban areas, especially to the Gauteng and the Cape Town metropole. Ms. Kat Kenyon spoke eloquently about the special needs crisis, so I'm not going to speak about that, but there is this significant special needs crisis that we are of the post-apartheid education system in South Africa. One portrays it as an unmitigated disaster, the other as a major success. Those who see it as a success point out to the undeniable increase in access to education, the increase in bachelor passes, etc. Those who see it as a failure often look at whether this has been achieved in a cost-effective fashion. There can therefore be little doubt that there has been significant successes, but at a substantial cost. It is clear that an inflection point was reached several years ago, and we cannot expect ever increasing budget allocations. The critical question that we face now is how to achieve ongoing successes, but within the budget that we have. Unfortunately, when we look at Bella Bill, what we see is an administrative bill that wants to give the education system a tune-up, but that will not present a solution. There are key problems with the bill. These are essentially what is in the bill, and areas that we will focus on are lowering the compulsory education age, SGB powers, penalties for non-school attendance, closure of micro schools, impacts on independent education, both the penalties for unregistered schools and the impact on homeschooling. There are then things that are not in the bill, and these are, there are then impacts that are not in the bill, and what is not in the bill is ECD, learners with special education needs, sufficient attention to that, independent micro schools, online and hybrid education. There is a lack of concern for procedural rights, and more broadly, we need to look at a substantial law reform. I will deal with all of these in turn. There is no research on how many ECDs offer grade R that are not registered, and these unregistered ECDs could face prosecution and an increased penalty in Clause 33 when the provision on lowering of the compulsory school age comes into effect. The lowering of the compulsory school age also has an unintended impact on homeschooling, because what will happen is parents who do not want to put their children into ECDs will then be required to put their children in, when they've been required to register their children for homeschooling. And we know that despite heroic efforts of staff in some of the provinces, The existing number of homeschooling applications has led to significant backlogs. And in fact, in some PEDs, it almost seems that they've given up processing homeschooling applications at all. So the question would be, once you lower the compulsory schooling age, how will you deal with the influx of applications for homeschooling? All in all, what unfortunately is missing in the bill is a comprehensive ECD section. The draft bailable excludes the broader ECD phase for 3 to 5 year olds. And the this is notable because the PCBE actually agreed to include ECD in the bailable, but this was not actioned. While the second CAB bill, the second CAB bill 2023 is planned to address ECD, the question is, why is the compulsory requirement included in the bailable now, but no legislative framework including how to achieve it? Would it not be better to rather incorporate the compulsory education requirement and the whole of ECD in a new comprehensive ECD bill? Another area of particular concern, and this has been raised by a number of other groups, such as the Equal Education Law Centre and Equal Education, is the increasing penalties for non-school attendance. This is an anti-progressive move. Research shows that it will have the opposite effect. Until 2013, fines of $250 could be compounded by court fees of up to $1,000 in Los Angeles for truancy. This led to a crushing debt for poor families, and the fines actually increased truancy from 5% to 28%. This is stated in UNESCO's 2017-2018 Global Monitoring Report on Accountability in Education. And that report is readily available, but does not appear in the SEER. The SEER, therefore, is incomplete. The socioeconomic impact assessment is therefore incomplete. It is proposed, therefore, that this section is removed and that truancy should be directed to the Children's Court. There is also clearly, from all of the inputs that we've seen over the last 3 days, a fundamental crisis in SGBs. But unfortunately, the concern over admission criteria and language policy are hiding the need for urgent, more comprehensive reform. The Equal Education Law Centre and Equal Education described how two conflicting motivations led to the creation of a world-leading cooperative model of school governance. And our SGB model was and is a leading example of stakeholder involvement in education. However, this model has not been enhanced and developed in the last 30 years. This has made it vulnerable to unwarranted state intervention. And a false dichotomy exists here, that there are no options other than increased autonomy for SGBs or increased executive control. We propose a dialogue process that emphasizes the third way based on process rights and true subsidiarity and solidarity. In the interim, we would support the proposal made by Solidarité. This is by no means a complete solution, but it may offer a solution for some schools that was made before the PCBE, that a clause be added to the bailable that allows for public schools to be converted to independent schools. This should proceed under suitable conditions, of course. An area of particular concern for Learn Free is the closure of small schools. The closure of small schools, particularly in rural areas, is an effective death sentence for rural communities. Bailable's proposed Section 34, Clause 35, that allows primary schools with 135 learners or less and high schools with 200 learners or less to be closed down without reasons needing to be given, is fundamentally unconstitutional. There is an engagement process here, but critically, no reasons for closure need to be given, as is the case with larger schools. Simply again, this is unconstitutional and a violation of one of the key principles of our Constitution. Section 33 of the Constitution entrenches the rights to fair administrative action that is lawful, reasonable, and procedurally fair. And it's notable that this was one of the key concerns with administration under the apartheid regime. So the desire to close micro schools, predominantly in rural areas, is part of the resource allocation crisis that we face. I spoke about that earlier. These schools are financially unviable and struggle to deliver quality teaching and learning. That cannot be doubted. But once again, there are hidden assumptions here. The fact is that it is difficult it is difficult to deliver the highly prescriptive and lockstep National Curriculum Statement, or CAPS, in a multi-grade environment. But the solution is not to close those schools, but to find curricula and approaches like those used in homeschooling and independent microschooling that are precisely suited to multi-grade teaching and learning, that do deliver high-quality education. And this is a prime example of how freedom in education, not necessarily freedom of education, can save schools. The Western Cape has placed a moratorium on the closure of schools because of the inadequate, and I would rather say no research, on the impact of rural school closure and the reliance process or policy on exclusively financial models. Once again, there is not only no research on this topic in the SEER, there is simply no mention of it in the SEER. It was argued before the PCBE that this fundamental right to reasons could not be violated, and that the promotion of an administrative justice act would in any event protect small schools. It is no doubt that that's true, and that the schools would have the right to reason being given. But it does appear that then there's no purpose that large and micro schools are being treated differently, and we should not have Section 33.4 at all. We urge that the committee simply remove it. The impact of Clause 33 on independent micro schools has been comprehensively covered by the Education First Research Group submission and by Ms. Kat Kenyon. ERNFA endorses their oral and written submissions, and I will only make one point. The state's duty to ensure children receive basic education is not only
Mnumzana, Kodero, your time is up. I'll give you an extra minute just to round up.
I've only got 15 minutes on my clock, Chair. And I was told 30.
Yeah, I'm monitoring the time. Continue.
Thank you, Chase. The state's duty to ensure children receive basic education is not only one of providing education, but equally one of facilitating education by private providers. And the state fails in this duty to facilitate. LearnFree's position is that Clause 51 on home education should not be included in SASA, but in a separate education bill. Ms. Mariki Ukerman has made a compelling case. Ms. Mariki Ukerman has made a compelling case for setting out why homeschooling should not be in the South African Schools Act. Not only does the inclusion of homeschooling negatively impact the unique nature of homeschooling, but the inclusion of homeschooling also impacts a number of definitions in the Act itself that negatively impacts public and independent schooling. We believe that home education should be regulated in an umbrella education act. LearnFree submits that in the interim, in respect of registration of homeschoolers, the Pestalozzi Trust's proposal presents a comprehensive rights-based approach, and we therefore endorse that approach. Whatever approach is adopted, a freedom of curriculum and assessment clause is essential to ensure South Africa meets its international obligations. Ms. Jennifer Harnepom of the Association of Homeschooling and Advocate Tony Palmer, presenting on behalf of the Pestalozzi Trust, have set out in detail South Africa's international obligations. These can be summed up in one phrase: minimum is not maximum. To impose on independent education the same contents and skills as are imposed on the state sector, or even predominantly the same contents and skills, is to rob the independent sector of the very independence that is protected by our constitution and by our international law obligations. Advocate Palmer highlighted the recent High Court decision that provides useful guidance on ensuring that minimum standards do not morph into maximum requirements. This case, judgment number 82 of 2022, issued on the 16th of June, a significant date for us, in 2022, in the matter Katholiek Onderwijs Vlaanderen en Anderen and Federatie van Rudolf Steiner Schulen in Vlaanderen en Anderen, considered the issue of what should be minimum objectives. It may be appropriate to mention that according to the Constitution, that our courts may have consideration of foreign law. This case arose because of the education minister of the Flemish community in Belgium facing a common problem, falling education standards, and he sought to address that by proposing new standards. This case involved a comprehensive challenge against the Flemish community decree of the 12th of February 2021, which outlined new education objectives for secondary schools. Various organizations, primarily representing Catholic and Steiner schools, filed petitions claiming that the decree infringed on the act of freedom of education by introducing overly detailed and extensive final objectives, thereby limiting schools' ability to implement their own pedagogical projects and curricula. They argued that this imposition restricts their freedom to offer education based on their distinct educational visions and pedagogical methods. The court found that the objectives were overly restrictive and unconstitutional and struck them down. Key principles emerge from this case. One is proportionality, to put this simply, objectives must allow enough time and space to pursue the unique educational approaches of the schools in question. The autonomy of educational institutions must be respected, that's the second principle, and final objectives should be an absolute minimum standard, not, for example, the over-detailed national curriculum statement we have in South Africa, which is our submission. Two additional principles require mention. These are the community's involvement in setting the objectives and that of law. Any legislation adopted by the Select Committee will have to be in accord with international law. One final comment on home education relates to the Parliament's engagement process. I'm going to make myself unpopular by saying that while Lenfree rejects the sale of alcohol on school premises, detailed laws are required to regulate the consumption of alcohol on school premises, for example, during church's communion services by educators and staff in their accommodation, and when in poor communities, the school hall is the only safe and suitable place for weddings. Yet because of a public outcry, this clause was summarily removed. The question arises why the homeschooling clause, which received a similar level of rejection and, dare I say, on a more substantive basis, remains in the bill. Lenfree's recommendations are therefore the following: that the Bella Bill be paused in the National Council of Provinces while a comprehensive package of education legislation is prepared to allow us to meet the challenges the educational sector will face in the next decade. This should start with an umbrella education bill based on our international treaty obligations and incorporating principles from the Children's Act and the Child Justice Act. To this should be added an ECD bill and potentially an LSEN bill as well. Homeschooling should be removed from SASSA and added into the umbrella education bill. Hybrid education should be added to this education bill. Independent micro schools and online schooling should be included in the Bella Bill. The last 3 days have seen a careful forensic dissection of the Bella Bill. It would be difficult to see how this Frankenstein bill can have life breathed into it at this stage. Whatever is the root cause, why after 10 years can a bill be so flawed? The answer we submit is simply the lack of proper participatory democracy. In Bekink's Principles of South African Constitutional Second Edition, the author states at page 81 that participatory democracy refers to the participation of individuals and institutions in government processes that have effect on them. The author goes on to state that participatory democracy is well established in the legislative branch, as today's proceedings illustrate, but is much less developed in the executive branch. This brings us to the case of Bella Bill's missing twin. The National Education Policy Act and the Schools Act are the twin bills that created the post-1994 education dispensation. However, SASSA is being changed at the moment, but NEPA has been neglected. SASSA should not be passed into law until NEPA is reformed to accelerate, democratize, and improve the quality of policy development and reform the policy-making process. Such a reform should entrench procedural rights and create an environment supportive of soft law to cater to emerging educational modalities. And if we have this fundamental reform, we will reform the policy-making process. By the time bills get to the National Council of Provinces, the level of dispute that we see over the current bill will not actually be taking place. Chair and members of the committee and all the presenters and members of the public, thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
Yes.
This thing freezes from time to time. Thank you very much, and Dave Kodero, for your presentation. we really appreciate that. Thank you very much, members. Do you have any clarity-seeking question to the presenter, so that when we present, we don't have to think about calling him back to say some of the things that needs to be clarified? Over to you. I'm going through our system here. I don't see any hand from the members. So therefore, thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. And the response, the committee will still make a determination, and that will always, it happens in the public domain, the information, sure you'll get it and know what the committee has decided upon. We're giving this opportunity now to Homeschool Association South Africa. They are represented by Mayor Rebecca Liebenberg. Mayor Liebenberg, the platform is yours.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, dear Honourable Committee members, Chairperson, and my speakers in arms. My name is Rebecca Liebenberg, and I am the founder and director of HSSA, a parent support group that grew organically over the years to eventually become a national relevant homeschooling association for South Africa. I knew about how effective support groups are from personal experience because I really struggled as a teen with many health issues and what felt to me was something like an apocalyptic social challenge. I shuddered to think what would have become of me had I been a teenager in today's world instead of the one I had, where phenomenal support and sensible guidance came from teachers, family and friends alike. It is from this perspective that I started a homeschooling support group for parents. Sorry? Hello? Can I continue? I'm not sure if anybody...
Yes, ma'am, you can continue.
Thank you. Okay, so from this perspective, I started a homeschooling support group for parents who felt incompetent to take on full responsibility for the education of our children. That was 16 years ago. A support group draws together all kinds of people who have common experiences or concerns and who provide each other with encouragement, comfort, and advice. Our group grew steadily as the people who populated it provided for each other and created a space to share personal experiences and feelings and coping strategies. What made this so useful and effective was that we were and are able to share firsthand, tried and tested best practices that benefit our children. There aren't enough books or teacher training colleges or universities that can compare to the worth of a mom or dad's word on how and what and when to manage the typical and atypical challenges a parent faces on a daily basis as they fulfill the roles of provider, friend, teacher, nurse, taxi driver, policeman, bouncer, banker, therapist. For almost a decade, our support group grew in leaps and bounds, and we bonded as a community and learned to become better parents, better spouses, better role models for our families, our communities, and each other. Any homeschooling parents can tell you that homeschooling taught them just as much as it taught their children. The learning lifestyle is not only for the recipient of information in a home education setting. Rather, it creates an exponential growth of talents and aptitudes and interests of all who are part of the journey. And it is a journey. Homeschooling is not just a year's sabbatical from mainstream living. Homeschooling is a very unique, long-term system of connected processes that reaches the same end goals anybody else would in life, except the experiences along the way are wonderfully different. Please don't pass laws that rob us and our children of these rich experiences. And don't listen to the jealous rantings of non-homeschoolers who spew hate speech due to fundamental ignorance and media propaganda. I tell you all this dramatic, touchy-feely stuff because I have come to realize that it's futile fighting for something and motivating for something that even being the living evidence of something, if your audience doesn't have a heart. I may just be one mom here before you, but with me in solidarity stands another almost 28,000 from our community who subscribe to the alternative education sector. Homeschooling is the main protagonist in the story as we know, but many characters and genres could fit into that definition, and it could be far greater than you are aware of if only our leadership, who are mandated to serve the citizens, would give us a gap to offer thorough information, compelling evidence-based research, and once we've established a good line of communication with you, any baked goods you might enjoy. I'm really hoping to pull on your heartstrings right now because I want your attention. I want you to listen to what we are saying as a community. I've been praying that our words will fall like a drenching rain that sinks into a rich soil of your heart, and that compassion and understanding and tolerance will sprout so that you may recognize us and see our rather bizarre plight of having to defend our children from the very ones who are supposed to be our backup and guidance and pillar of strength. That's you. South Africa has been through enough, and many struggles have built character in all of us, but we really do need some breathing room for that to flourish and develop into a sense of agency so that our subsequent generations can see our country as a springboard into life rather than a claustrophobic nanny state to run from. We can't expect our children to want to come home if home is unwelcoming. Please think about this very seriously as you contemplate all that we have told you over the last few days. I'm hoping that from our many submissions, with copious repetition of pertinent points of view, that you will be struck by the sheer volume of so many people saying the same thing for so long, rather than becoming dismissive, like the DBE and many from the PCBE. We repeat our sentiments because they are worth repeating. Our children are worth that effort, and we are not going to give up until we have found a rational, reasonable, and peaceful compromise with our government. So what's wrong with the history of the Bilbo? The Bilbo's efforts to align the South African School Act, 84 of 96, and the Employment Educators Act, 76 of 98, with developments in the education landscape have not taken into consideration that the developments over the last 5 to 10 years requires the outdated elements of the amendments to be reviewed as a matter of urgency. We understand that the planning and turnaround time for these things are long and the efforts are tedious. However, for education reform in a country with as many unique hurdles as ours, we need to apply the same principles that we do to our own learners. Assessment and intervention cannot happen every 15 years, and we won't ignore it or discount almost a lifetime's worth of applied effort, development, and changing needs of our learners. So it behooves me to point out to you that this is exactly what's been going on under your noses at the DBE. I must hasten to add here, however, that over the last 4 years or so, I've had the privilege and blessing to get to know some of the staff within the DBE structure, and it's difficult for me to say these things with them in mind. They're good people who work exceptionally hard, and they spend sleepless nights worrying about the children in our country. As with any career in education, being a cog in the system is difficult. The work is emotionally draining and sometimes downright heartrending. So it's more of a calling than a job. Their individual excellence, unfortunately, cannot buffer the slack stewardship we have seen from the body or the collective of the whole department. Many of the clauses in the bill come from efforts and documents produced prior to 2014, which is an entire decade ago, and during which decade the DOE and DBE had received copious amounts of public feedback about what they told us they were planning, but which was subsequently disregarded. All the meetings with our sector up to 2020 were not open to the public. Imagine that. They were not open to the public. Instead, the DBE chose to consult with only a few in our sector, stakeholders and role players that they deemed privileged for that role. This lack of transparency was aggravated by further withholding of information. The meeting's minutes and resolutions were also withheld from our alternative sector, and stakeholders and role players as we are those, were asked to offer commentary over the years without having been given full disclosure or even information with which to make informed choices and decisions. How could we give comprehensive commentary in response to proposed regulations that directly impact our daily personal lives? By the time planning for the implementation phase commenced around 2019-2020, our membership, then brand new line of communication with the DBE, became pointless in the face of a done deal in which the vast majority of our sector had had no opportunity for participation at all. We didn't realize this at first, and the roundtable meeting actually gave us some hope that at last we could be heard on what it is we do in home education. Alas, it turned out to be a farce, much like this recent process has been, with officials merely going through the motions to get to a predetermined point. The purpose of public participation in our participatory democracy is so that we can participate. The participation is meaningless for democracy if our efforts are shelved or filed under X, while top leadership forge ahead with a master plan that doesn't cater for or take into account or even pretend to serve the interests of South African citizens. The efforts made over the years by those who were privileged to gain the strategic favour of the rather shrewd leadership of the Education Ministry were also frustrated by a large range of administrative challenges and incompetencies. And then the chaos that has ensued during 2020-22 meant that by the time the draft bill was tabled, we actually needed to start all over again. And yet here we are. This bill was tabled at a point in its development where it needed an entire overhaul. Given the sheer volume and gravity of changes in the South African education sphere in the last 5 years, actually, never mind the last 15 years or so, and especially over the pandemic period, and due to the subsequent changes we saw in society, specifically with regard to education, so very much of the bill became obsolete, outdated, inappropriate, and even discriminatory before it was fraudulently tabled before the committee in November of 22. Many of us and many representatives of the home education movement, together with various religious groups and parents associations and the affiliates, have repeatedly requested that proper research and consultation be done by the DBE into the education or home education sector specifically. As you've now heard repeatedly from many other speakers and organizations, absolutely no discovery was done into the mechanisms, feasibility, psychology, cost, or other aspects of home schooling. We are still waiting, dear honorable members, for someone in the department responsible for this aspect of legislature to do the job they're paid to do and to do justice to the hundreds and hundreds of parents, teachers, providers who invest all their waking hours and most of the time they should be sleeping to this cause that is driven by our love for all children and our sense of absolute desperation for what they must face 10 years from now. We are also thinking and planning ahead, and we boot that parents will sacrifice their lives for the little faces who look to us expectantly with trust and hope in their eyes. What has happened here is just not going to fly. And while we all came here to motivate and present and unpack aspects of the bill, you and I both know that there's so much more to tackle and that these presentations should serve as a warning from a very patient people who are standing up now to say, please, enough is enough. It's an established fact that although our sector was not really consulted, we sought out the DBE and reached out to engage. 10 years worth of pleading and writing and motivating has been blatantly ignored by that arm of government and is now up to the legislature to right this wrong before it becomes entrenched in the law, enforceable, and carrying severely excessive punitive measures. The massive punitive steps that criminalize a parent for an administrative fault is probably the single most ridiculous addition to the amendments, and we don't see it as a deterrent, but rather as a challenge to face. As a people who have built a thriving and complex social structure comprising diverse races, religions, and worldviews, our movement spans more than 3 decades of persistent resistance pertinently to institutionalized education. I'm just going to read that sentence again. Persistent resistance of pertinently institutionalized educational forcefulness. This simply cannot be ignored any longer. In the late 90s, our movement saw the birth of a formal and informal home education association legal defense fund, which was initiated by the early home education families who saw the eventual need for legal protection from our own government. This development alone should stand firmly as primary evidence against the arm of government that is supposed to be responsible for the people's needs for quality education. It is unacceptable that we need to establish mediation bodies between the people and the government to be able to exercise an existing right to home educate our children, according to our own consciences. The only remedy for this set of circumstances for this committee is to launch an investigation into the DBE and DOE to discover why they have set themselves at odds against the parents of school-going children. For the sake of our peace of mind, we will probably always contribute towards legal representative bodies like this, but technically, it shouldn't be necessary in a free country like ours. Then during the early 2000s, people organically started coalescing into social groups that catered for their preferred kinds and styles of education. This is blatantly evidenced by the evolution of many private publications spanning the last two decades. The well-populated social media channels and groups and very well-organized grassroots face-to-face groupings of home educators who collaborate to expand their children's sporting, social, cultural experiences outside of the mainstream schooling sector. This is, in fact, your committee's ambit. We are providing, maintaining and growing an entire sector in our country, and you are about to pass a bill that will curb, limit, prevent, and break down a lifetime's worth of work and effort. This is not a small thing, and we are going to take this as an act of violence against our community. Since the informal micro school sector is not technically part of the homeschooling genre, and cottage schools run by providers don't really fit the description of what home education is, our organization supposed to speak for the sector, like so many have rudely spoken on behalf of homeschooling, but we do want to make mention of what we see from our vantage point, which is a mostly unrepresented sector of education in our country. I can't fathom how the actual department that is responsible with this has just sidelined hundreds of thousands of people. So we are here to tell you that we stand in front of them as human shields to protect the good work that they do and to vouch for their relevance and their right to continue to exist, because the children of South Africa need them. If you as a committee help shut down an entire sector with a thriving economy by passing this bill, then we will have no choice but to conclude that you're either unfit for your position or you're collectively lacking in insight and basic common sense. Not to mention a lack of compassion for the children who have nowhere else to go once the cottage schools are outlawed. Anyway, so where to from here? Since the stakeholders and role players in our sector have been trying to have their voices heard on the nuts and bolts mechanisms of our daily lives, there should be a library's worth of submissions in hard copy and in digital records available to you. I can't speak to systems used by the DBE and hope that you will have access to this, but if you did, you will notice that it is not only the DBE who deserves to be investigated and held accountable for the miscarriage and dereliction of duty towards our sector. Sadly, within our sector, we too have parents, teachers, organizations, and business owners who have been manipulating the education sector, the process of making laws, and now even this committee for the express purpose of fiscal gain. While we all have the right to earn, this right should never be an infringement of our individual and personal rights to choose for our families and ourselves, and especially regarding what approach to take in the education of our children. Your way is not the only way, and we can prove it. One prime example is that homeschoolers are already being denied permission to home educate if they dare to be honest about using online support. This is unacceptable. It proves that registration, which is in Clause 35, is not what it purports to be, and the DBE is holding our right to educate at home hostage to some background plan to monetize the part of the private sector that serves our communities. What exactly are you going to do about this, honourable members? As has been mentioned by other presenters over the last few days, and one in particular, the white paper holds that parents or guardians have the primary responsibility for the education of their children and have the right to be consulted by the state authorities with respect to the form that education to take and to take part in its governance. We haven't taken part. I've shown you how this is not and is not what is happening and how this bill will make sure it will never need to happen. We will be absolutely limited. Parents have an inalienable right to choose the form of education which is best for their children, particularly in the early years of schooling. So please do the right thing and send this bill back to where it needs to comply with the law and make it subject to reasonable safeguards. Please, it needs to be subject to reasonable safeguards. As I've mentioned already, the members of our sector value their autonomy and they do not want mediation bodies set up to negotiate terms of engagement or for regulatory bodies born of nepotism and cronyism to arbitrarily design standards and norms for practices they don't understand, represent or participate with. We vehemently reject this bill because of the implications of many of the amendments, and along with it, we reject the DBE's silent partner interests and the underhanded behaviour that threatens to lay capture of our sector for the sake of making a buck on the back of innocent children's future. Right, so now that you know who we are, that we are many, and that we are fully aware of the state-led and private sector shenanigans, you can appreciate that we mean business. So let's try and quickly unpack this thing before the weekend starts. I see it's gone just over half my time already. 15 minutes is not really enough to focus in detail on all the amendments we would like to. So we're just going to offer an overview of what needs to be renegotiated, let's say, and addressed so that we can indeed have education reform and some sensible laws to live with. I had more to offer along the lines of how these amendments infringe on some of our constitutional rights, but you've heard from many speakers on this, so I am amending my presentation to relegate just a mention to this. And when the time comes, we are happy to go directly to the Constitutional Court and battle it out there to claim our rights, if further blatant disregard were to ensue. As was mentioned in another presentation before mine, the state has an obligation to respect, protect, and promote these rights in terms of not only the Constitution, but also international covenants the Republic is signatory to, including the Convention Against Discrimination in Education, the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, and the Convention on the Rights of the Child. This is no small matter, and the people will hold you accountable should our children be put in the line of fire. So we're looking at just a list of main concerns with certain clauses, not all of them. From our homeschooling perspective, we obviously feel we can't really have a say on everything. So this is what affects us. These clauses are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 14, 15, 16, 18, 19, 33, 39, 41, 42, and 50. All our previous submissions refer. I will focus on those that have the most significant impact on our sector and our membership. Apart from the overriding theme of excessive empowerment of national and provincial education department heads to overrule parents and children's rights and wishes and teachers' autonomy, teachers are people too, and they often stand instead of parents. So you're going to be putting them in an impossible situation. And of course, the rather bizarre manner in which school governing bodies will become tokens of governance with no real authority to protect their communities or even just recourse to possible corruption from the government. In its current form, as per the mentioned clauses, the billable constitutes an infringement of various rights of parents and children and teachers, in that the wording contradicts international treaties upheld by our country. As I and others have pointed out, these amendments seek to make laws enforceable with jail time based on zero research, and the local and international data that is available has not been considered either. We've heard from the DBE and its agents at every public meeting, and it must be noted that the explanations and motivation going on in those presentations have served to alert the public to the discrepancies between what is actually written in the bill and what the officials try to convince us is meant by them. I point you here to massive irregularities going on in the public hearings over the last 10 months, where members of the PCBE committee and even some on your provincial committees have interrupted and prevented speakers who come prepared with proper statistical data to prove that our citizenry don't want these amendments. I personally witnessed three such instances in Gauteng, the Eastern Cape, and in Mpumalanga. We ask that you launch an investigation into this matter of lack of communication to the public prior to the meetings, and obviously the massive irregularities that are still currently going on. And we also ask that you instruct the relevant responsible body to conduct a decent socioeconomic impact assessment. For homeschoolers, this bill will incur massive costs. So we may as well put that money into fighting for our rights to protect our children from dangerous schools and dubious ideological academic content. I'm going to run through these as quick as possible. I see I only have 10 minutes left. Clause 1, the definitions are expanded in ways that infringe on standard norms. Clause 2. Is a lack of definition for just cause, and it also doesn't cater for homeschooling specifically. Clause 3 is purposed to prevent the school dropout rate. This clause has failed. Our submissions refer. Clause 4 is interesting because it highlights a no discrimination policy and documents for admissions to school. And I'd like to compare this to homeschooling. To start with, final authority is not a phrase that should exist in any law, so that needs to be removed, please. And the admissions policy is subject to the HOD, and if that is the case, it should have very clear parameters if government wishes to have this level of oversight, so as to avoid future abuse of any vague meaning or future regulations that are abhorrent to society. So if we look at this and we see that a lack of documentation cannot withhold a child's right to education, we feel that this should be equally applied to the Clause 35 for homeschooling, where if our lack of documentation is evident, that becomes part of the criteria for permission to homeschool. So we don't get permission because a document might be missing. And a document might be missing because the Department of Home Affairs hasn't functioned for 10 years. It's not the parent's fault. It's not the child's fault. We should not be held responsible for consequences that are beyond our control. And then on top of that, be lumped with a punitive measure that could see us sit in jail for a year. Clause 5 caused much angst for the public over language policy fears. The government has just not done its duty in informing the public timeously or with enough detail. I personally don't have an issue with it, but there are many homeschoolers who have reached out to me who say they have absolutely a huge issue with it. So as an organization, we do ask for this to be revised. In Clause 6, the national curriculum statement is mentioned, which pertinently refutes what we've been told by the DBE that this bill does not address curriculum. I'm going to skip a few clauses and go to Clause 14. While it's not strictly homeschooling related, the implications of this clause that refers to continually changing norms and standards and something called identified support material based on criteria expressed as innocuous adjectives like effective and efficient. This very small amendment, it's a tiny little clause, comprises a change of only 10 years. But it's going to entrench a precedent of content selection that is subject to nothing other than the sentiments of whoever is vested with the absolute power this bill seeks to attain over the entire education sector. We are part of that sector, and we are being told that much of our content will need to comply to what these amendments stipulate. The real risk here for home education lies in the procurement of prescribed academic material. We don't have or want a governing body, which Clause 6 might enforce on us, by the way. Parents don't want a middleman making arrangements and decisions for the learning lifestyle and aptitudes and interests of children who were permanently removed from the mainstream system for that very reason. I've got on the screen punitive clauses, which you can read, but I will continue going through my clause to clause. Clause 15 speaks to Clause 6 and 14 in that the consultation with governing bodies is meaningless if their functions could be adjusted for the purposes of agreement with enforcement. Reasonable grounds means that each governing body will have to motivate, fight, and fund resistance to unsavory changes to a school, where such changes also impact local social spheres. If an impasse is reached, the HOD might declare it an urgent case, which this provides for, which will neatly sidestep the governing body anyway, making all the wordiness of limitations in the HOD an absolute waste of ink on this bill. The DOE and DBE seek to an inordinate amount of power over schools, and as homeschoolers, we worry about this for the sake of our children, who might want to go back into the mainstream system at some point of their education journey. It is in our interest to speak up about this. Phrases such as sufficient reasons should not be used as vaguely as they are, because it confuses interpretation, and we feel this may actually be intentional. I'm going to skip to clause 19, which is about more regulation of the governing bodies, which could erode local community camaraderie and break down years worth of soft skills development, interrupting progress and stripping experienced yet unqualified members of their usefulness to the community. This is a dismantling of a people. It's cruel and unusual treatment of those who gave of their time to build a better South Africa. Clause 33, penalty for unregistered independent schools, that's just not acceptable. I'm still struggling to understand how a Department of Education can stop schools from existing. And they haven't even given good enough reason, and they've done no impact studies for this as well. That brings me to clause 35. This must be removed and reworked. We actually need our own document for this, because it's all about homeschooling. It needs its own document, because the sector is so much more complex and vast than the DBE pretends it to be. We've actually written a heck of a lot on clause 35, so I'm actually going to not go into depth with it, because I see I'm running out of time. Clause 39 is an interesting one. One person can't have so much power as to cause regulations to become a subsidiary law and then use that as an implementation strategy later on down the road. It's just really not on for our sector. And clause 38, which is a general absolution of liability for the department and possibly government in general, will allow them to do exactly this. The injustice of enforcement without fair recourse is inconceivable in a democratic society. This can't happen. This bill incurs costs, prevents cultural appreciation, and strips us of our social rights as homeschoolers. How on earth is this even getting past the committee members? This kind of lip service to the people has reached the end of its efficacy, and no one is impressed. The fact that we are members of the African Charter, and it says it focuses on the rights and welfare of children, while most of Africa is developing academically, that's what they say, and yet it's actually falling deeper into famine as African countries' debts pile higher and higher. We're not developing academically. The welfare is not being taken care of. The lip service is too much. We are indeed following a trajectory, but not the actual principles as has been offered and as evidenced by the collapsed education system, deserted school buildings and barely functional hospitals that can't use their phones because the government didn't pay the bills. Homeschoolers remove themselves from this chaos because it is not in the best interest of our children to suffer such consequences for which they are not responsible. Clause 35 really needs to be removed from this bill so that our sector may negotiate with the DBE for a bill that will help and guide and support home-educated children instead of criminalizing their parents for the sake of an administrative fault of refusing to enter into an agreement during the process of registration for home education. I thank you very much for giving me an extra minute. I really appreciate that. I don't think I've finished. Yes, I did finish. That was my last slide. Thank you. And if there are any questions, I'm willing to answer them.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My honourable members, if there are questions that members would like to ask, points of clarity on the presentation, you may raise your hand on this platform, budget, and then
yeah,
your, you can then engage. Looking at the hand set here, I don't see any raised hand on the platform, and so I'll therefore thank you, Melly Van Berg, for having made this time.
Thank you very much.
Presentations on matters that you can get very close to your heart. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We take in this platform now, giving it to, let's do it together for education. And there is a Ubabo Naresh Badal. Ntate Badal, you are.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity in allowing me to present today. My name is Naresh Badal, and I am presenting to you on behalf of Let's Do It Together for Education, a registered non-profit organization and a registered public benefit organization. Our aim is to increase access to education and improve educational opportunities. The purpose of our presentation today is to ask for an amendment to the Bella Bill, in particular Clause 33. Our concern is the lack of recognition for micro-cottage centers. Micro-cottage centers, as the name suggests, are small-scale educational centers, often operated from private homes and cater on average for between 5 and 25 learners. They are regarded as illegal because they cannot meet the registration requirements that are designed for large schools. Clause 33 imposes penalties, increased imprisonment of up to 12 months, or a fine, or both a fine and imprisonment for persons that operate micro-cottage centers. Within our existing education legislation, there are two categories of schools: public schools, which are governed by the state, and independent schools, commonly known as private schools, which are privately owned. Independent schools are obligated to undergo registration with provincial education department, adhere to various governmental regulations, and apply to Umalusi for accreditation. Within the independent schooling sector, there is a category known as unregistered private schools, which are regarded as illegal. These private schools are educational institutions that function independently of the formal government-regulated education system, without official recognition or accreditation. Micro-cottage centers are classified as independent schools. The South African Schools Act does not accommodate them, and they are expected to follow the same registration process as large schools. This current regulatory environment is not enabling for micro-cottage centers. It is creating barriers and significant challenges and risks in our education system. Home education has gained significant popularity and is the fastest growing education sector globally. The landscape and dynamics of education in South Africa have changed, and this change is influenced by a number of factors, including continuous advancements in technology, new generation learners, and individualized learning needs. The momentum at which the winds of change are blowing is propelling education forward faster than ever before. When micro-cottage centers initially emerged, they addressed not only the lack of alternative and affordable private education, but also the difficulties faced by parents who wished to provide their children with advantages of home education, yet were unable to do so for various reasons. We are witnessing a surge in micro-cottage schools providing alternatives to traditional schooling. These centers have adapted to fulfill the need of non-traditional education, providing structured learning atmospheres similar to home-based education. They cater for a range of educational philosophies, curriculum choices, and learners' needs. As per Stats SA, we currently have just under 2,300 registered private schools, but there are well over 3,000 micro-cottage centers. There is also some evidence to suggest that there are possibly close to 5,000 micro-cottage centers in existence across South Africa. In 2022, we conducted an informal survey in which we interviewed micro-center owners. We acknowledge that this survey is limited to 63 center owners only, and this is because unregistered centers are afraid to participate as they fear exposing themselves and being forcefully closed. We also acknowledge that this survey was only limited to centers operating in Gauteng. However, the information obtained is extremely valuable. 95% of micro centers have less than 25 learners. in the context of comparisons, there is about half the number of learners in one public school classroom. Almost half of these centers have learners with special educational needs and or barriers to learning. 18% of centers follow an alternative curriculum. The preferred choice of alternative curriculums within these centers are the British International Cambridge curriculum and the American Core States, which are both comparable to CAPS curriculum. 88% of centers are owner-managed and the owner is a SACE-registered educator. All centers that we interviewed, parents are registered with a curriculum service provider, where the curriculum material is provided by the curriculum service provider. 93% of these curriculum service providers also provide assessments. 92% of centers are operated from the homes of the owners, where some alterations or modifications have been made to accommodate teaching and learning. The majority of centers, and not just the centers that we interviewed in the survey, but the centers that exist across South Africa, are not opposed to registration, but there is no support for the challenges that they experience. They simply just cannot meet the requirements for registration. The first step in the registration process is to register with the Provincial Education Department. Centers fail to meet municipal requirements, complex and costly rezoning, health certificates, fire and safety certificates, and provincial education department management standards that are written for big schools. If a center does succeed to register with a provincial education department, they must apply for accreditation from Umalusi. The cost of accreditation with Umalusi if a center does succeed in their attempts to register as an independent school for grades 1 to 9 is approximately 150,000 rand. Fees are paid in different steps in the accreditation process, and if you fail, there are additional reassessment fees, which is estimated to be around 70,000 rand. No microcenter with less than 25 learners can afford to pay registration costs of approximately 200,000 rand. Based on a report from Umalusi on accreditation and monitoring of private educational institutions and private assessment bodies for the period of 1st of April 2021 to the 31st of March 2022, there is an increasing number of institutions that apply for accreditation and fail. The implications of failed registrations or unregistered centers that continue to operate illegally present significant concerns, challenges, and risks to the education system, learners, and parents. The implications of this unregulated environment are far-reaching. Students are subjected to inconsistent standards of education, with the quality of instruction and curriculum delivery varying widely. The qualifications and competence of tutors are not verified, potentially compromising the educational experience and outcome of learners. Furthermore, the absence of a regulatory oversight creates opportunities for exploitation of parents with dishonest practices and misleading information. Questionable curriculum delivery undermines the educational development of learners. The absence of transparency and accountability also erodes trust between relevant stakeholders. Without proper regulation, there is limited assurance that learners attending these centers receive a quality education that meets minimum standards. In response to these concerns, Let's Do It Together for Education has established the Standards Commission for Independent Alternative Education Centers, a quality assurance body addressing the need for effective quality control in educational standards, safety standards, and ethical practices. We have established a Standards Commission to help recognize these micro-cottage centers. Our framework provides clear guidelines and standards for these alternative educational centers that are already operating and provides guidance to those who want to establish similar centers. It includes educational standards, safety standards, operating standards, and ethical practices, protecting the rights of parents and learners and promoting transparency and accountability in this sector. When micro-cottage centers first emerged, they were in response to the absence of alternative and affordable private education. Now it has come to mean not just the absence of alternative and affordable private education, but the exclusion of educational centers that do not qualify for registration that is written for big centers, for big schools. Microcenters play a pivotal role as the true embodiment of the missing middle in education. They offer tailored, personalized learning experiences catering to students who flourish in such environments. There is no clear and formal definition of what a micro-cottage center is, There is no policy guidance on the procedure for the establishment and registration of such a centre. In the absence of a definition of what a microcottage centre is, the Standards Commission for Independent Alternative Education Centres defines microcottage centres as independent alternative education centres, and these are educational institutions that operate independently, is not registered as a traditional independent school, but is quality controlled and registered with a Standards Commission that offers alternative approaches to education and enrolls learners in one or more grades from grade R to grade 9. The defining feature of what an independent alternative education center is its independence from mainstream schooling while still adhering to regulatory standards for quality and safety. The purpose of the Standards Commission of Independent Alternative Education Centres is to provide quality assurance that helps maintain and improve the quality of services offered by microcottage centres. This not only benefits parents and learners, but also enhances the reputation of centres. Establishing and maintaining centres which ensures consistency and uniformity, making it easier to assess and compare quality across different centres in different regions. To create accountability for microcottage centres, ensuring that they are responsible for the quality and safety of their services and learners. This encourages ethical behaviour, transparency and integrity in the sector. Quality control processes that encourage microcottage centres to continuously monitor, evaluate and improve their operations. Ultimately, regulating and quality controlling microcottage centres helps to protect public interest and maintain the reputation of the entire sector. Ensuring that parents have positive experiences with microcottage centres is of importance. The advantages of having a Standards Commission for microcottage centres: our quality control framework promotes educational quality and accountability. It ensures centres adhere to educational standards, safety standards and ethical practices. We grant centres legitimacy in the educational landscape. It demonstrates their commitment to meeting and maintaining educational standards, which enhances their credibility amongst parents and educational authorities. We promote quality assurance by establishing guidelines and criteria for educational practices, curriculum implementation, tutor competence, and learner well-being. Through regular monitoring and evaluation, centers registered with us can continuously improve their educational offerings and provide a high standard of education. This ensures that learners receive a quality education and are protected from potential educational deficiencies and reduces the concerns the Department of Education has in the existence and operation of unregistered centres. We prioritise the well-being and safety of learners. By registering with the Commission, centres commit to meeting safety standards, ensuring adequate facilities and employing qualified tutors. This focus on learner well-being provides the Department of Basic Education with peace of mind, knowing that children are in safe and nurturing learning environments. We offer training and development opportunities to centres, and their participation in these initiatives enhances their skills and expertise of their tutors, enabling them to provide high-quality learning experiences for their learners. The Standards Commission serves as an advocate for registered centres, representing their interests and needs to educational authorities and stakeholders. This collective voice can contribute to shaping policies, gaining recognition for the important role tutor microcottage centres play in the education landscape. This advocacy aims to shape policies and standards that support the growth and legitimacy of the sector. Our strategic objectives serve as a guiding framework. They provide a roadmap for us to pursue our mission effectively by outlining specific areas of focus and desired outcomes. These strategic objectives allow us to align our efforts, resources, and initiatives towards common goals, ensuring coherence, efficiency, and impact in quality controlling microcentres. It also provides a basis for evaluation and accountability, enabling us to measure our progress, identify areas for improvement, and adapt to changing circumstances. Our operating standards outline the expectations and requirements for centres. These standards aim to ensure that centres provide quality education in a safe and inclusive environment, supported by competent staff, effective curriculum, and ongoing evaluation and improvement processes. We have a code of conduct for independent alternative education centres. It is a set of ethical principles and standards that guide the behaviour and practices within this educational environment. It emphasises the importance of fostering a positive learning environment characterized by respect, integrity, professionalism, and child protection. Our code of conduct underscores the significance of compliance with regulatory standards and continuous professional development to ensure the delivery of quality education and the well-being of learners. The performance and monitoring criteria that we outline is designed to ensure continuous assessment and improvement of micro-cottage centers through systematic evaluation across various domains, including academic achievement, curriculum implementation, compliance with standards, teaching and learning practices, student engagement and well-being, development, continuous improvement, feedback and evaluation, and adherence to ethical and professional standards. The Commission aims to uphold the quality of education and safeguard the interests of learners and stakeholders. These performance monitoring criteria serve as a vital benchmark for monitoring micro-cottage centers, identifying areas for improvement, and fostering a culture of accountability and transparency. The aim is to promote excellence, innovation, and inclusivity in micro-centers, ultimately ensuring the delivery of high-quality education and holistic development opportunities for all learners. Why should we use the Standards Commission for Independent Alternative Education Centers? As a quality control body, we help to establish and maintain standards for curriculum, teaching methods, and assessment practices. This ensures consistency and uniformity in educational quality. Centers that adhere to established guidelines and regulations promote accountability and transparency, reducing the likelihood of unethical practices, fraud, or non-compliance. It helps us to level the playing field, ensuring that all educational institutions, regardless of their size, location, or resources, meet minimum quality standards. This promotes equity and access to quality education for all learners, regardless of their social, economic background, or geographic location. Our quality control measures implemented help to identify potential risks and vulnerabilities in the education sector. By conducting regular assessments, evaluations, and audits, we can proactively mitigate risks related to educational quality, safety, and compliance, thereby safeguarding the interests of learners, educators, and stakeholders. We can hold educational institutions accountable for the quality of education they provide. Through monitoring, evaluation, and accreditation processes, we can assess their performance, identify areas for improvement, and ensure that centers take corrective actions when necessary. Despite the obvious advantages of saving the state money, filling the gaps of the lack of public schools, Generation Alpha learners often thrive in environments where individual needs and interests are acknowledged and catered to. Micro-cottage centers with their smaller class sizes and more intimate settings can provide personalized attention and customized learning experiences tailored to each student's learning style and pace. Micro-cottage centers can specialize in catering to diverse learners, including those with learning disabilities, neurodiverse conditions, or special educational needs. They can offer tailored services and support and adaptive technologies, as well as individualized attention to help those learners thrive academically and personally. Micro-cottage centers may embrace alternative education curriculums such as Cambridge and the American Core Curriculum, and philosophies and methodologies such as Montessori, Waldorf, or project-based learning, which allows learners to explore their interests, develop critical thinking skills, and engaging hands-on learning experiences beyond the traditional classroom setting. Our learners today are from Generation Alpha, and we need to accommodate them. As an independent alternative education center registered with the Standards Commission, in the eyes of a tutor center, parents can be rest assured that their child's education at an education center is of utmost quality comparable to that of a private school. Although the center is not officially registered as an independent school, they uphold the same rigorous standards and commitments to excellence, and they provide the same level of quality education available in an independent private school. Microcenters are not competition to large independent and public schools. They are certainly not a replacement for them. Micro-cottage centers are a beacon of hope and a solution to bridge the gap between traditional schooling and the demands of parents. The nature of whether parents opt for prestigious, large-scale, expensive, registered independent schools or smaller, informal, quality-assured, unregistered cottage schools that have far greater flexibility in their approach to education should be of secondary importance, with the primary focus being on the school's ability to deliver high-quality education. The Bella Bill offers us a chance to grant micro-cottage centers the acknowledgement they deserve. Let's Do It Together for Education requests that provision be made in the bill for such centers to be quality controlled and be given an opportunity to gain recognition. We don't want to create a separate education system. We want to increase educational opportunities and improve access to quality education. With this, we can expand the private schooling sector, which benefits everyone in society. Our written submission includes our framework, which you can view. We would also like to state that we support First Education Research Group and Learning Cat proposals. With this, I thank you so much, Chair, for allowing me to present today. Thank you.
So, sorry, I was thrown out of the meeting. Hi, Nultando.
Hi, Chair. The presenter is finished.
Oh, no. I thought there's something wrong with my phone because I was thrown out of the meeting. I've just now reconnected. Thank you very much. Are there questions on the of clarity based on the presentation? Check from my gadgets. Yeah, I don't see any hand. And in the absence of any hand, I'll take this opportunity to thank Naresh Badal for having made time to come to the committee and actually talk to us and make a contribution towards the debate. Thank you very much. We all members, the name of Ms. Tanya Funis. She's a private candidate, not representing any organization. So I took liberty to invite her to the meeting after having lots of correspondence to and fro between her office and mine. Let's hear what she has to say to us. Ma'am Tanya Funis, if I'm pronouncing your name very well, the surname well.
Yes, thank you very much. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I do. You're loud and clear.
Thank you. Thank you. I say good afternoon to you all. It has been a very long 3 days of oral presentations for the NCOP Select Committee, and I appreciate that I'm able to speak to you this afternoon on the 8th of March, 2024. Chairperson, may I respectfully ask if we have a quorum to continue with this last meeting?
Whose quorum?
Your quorum for the Select Committee, please.
No, the quorum starts when we hold our meeting as the committee. You may continue with your presentation.
Thank you so much. If this was a personal meeting, I would be able to greet you properly and individually, and I would recognize you by saying, welcome to this presentation, and I would say, I see you, and I see you. But as we are embracing technology and that we are moving forward in this artificial space, I respectfully greet each one of the elected members of this committee. As an introduction to what homeschooling is, please could Ms. Kaka play the video that has been prepared and provided to her for 2.5 minutes. Would that be possible?
Within 30 minutes, that is given to all participants. Yes. And for your information, you ask information about the quorum of the meeting. I don't know where that comes in, but we do make a quorum in case you have problems with presenting whether you think there is no quorum.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Ms. Gaka, are we able to play the video? Are you able to put the sound on? Any of the music.
I'm just seeing pictures, I see movies, I don't hear anything.
So you are meant to be seeing a video with music, but I do not hear it myself.
I see all these nice pictures, but I can't hear any music or... I wonder if you could just talk to the pictures as they appear, because for me, I'm just seeing pictures, very beautiful flowers and books.
Oh, the volume was on my side. I'm not sure with that.
No, maybe it was my...
Hi, are you able to hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
So there was meant to be music to that video. I'm sorry. It was simply meant to be an introduction to the way that I have homeschooled in the past 10 years. Thank you for playing it. As mentioned in the video, home education is protected in the South African Constitution, Section 29 of 2. Home education is an educational alternative. It is regulated by the South African Schools Act of 1996, Section 51. The Basic Education Law Amendment Act, Clause 1, 2, 6, and 35, seeks to change Section 51 in the SASA. I, as with many other home educators, reject specifically these clauses when it comes to home education. And I'd like to go through a presentation, but due to the sketchy internet issues, I'm going to switch off my video if you don't mind. Would that be all right with you, sir?
Yeah, you may.
Is that all right?
The 30 minutes is yours, we can do.
Yes, that is fine. All right. I hereby state that I sadly reject the bill due to a number of other clauses that can be considered as unconstitutional and may affect the Bill of Rights of the South African public. This requires intense investigation. The procedures observed in carrying out the Section 76 bill, which is a proposed law, is questionable and requires investigation. At PCBE level, numerous irregularities and discrepancies were observed. At provincial legislature phase, the Mpumalanga province, it was observed that a number of irregularities and discrepancies were seen. Although further public hearings took place, it seems as if they were not meaningfully or reasonably conducted. Other provincial legislative public hearings have noted other irregularities, such as the billable in totality not being provided to the public at these hearings, only summaries, as well as information being shared that states that children are not allowed to speak at these public hearings. This is a direct contradiction to the Convention of the Rights of the Child, Article 12 and Article 13. Article 12 says children have the right to give their opinions freely on issues that affect them. Adults should listen and take the children seriously. Article 12.2 says, for this purpose, the child shall, in particular, be provided the opportunity to be heard in any judicial and administrative proceedings affecting the child, either directly or through a representative. It has been observed that not many children and learners of school-going age, as defined by either SASSA of 1996 or the Bellable, have spoken up about this bill that has a direct impact on them. Those who have attempted to freely express their views as PCBE and particularly as provincial legislator have not been heard and have been discouraged with incorrect information being shared at the conclusion of certain provincial public hearings. It is also observed that a number of opening presentations of the provincial hearings have intimidated the public from speaking about the Bellable. I now move on to the lack of research regarding the home education sector. During PCBE level, the SEIA, the Social Economic Impact Assessment, that has already been mentioned by the Cape Home Educators earlier today, shows a lack of research on the home education community. The DBE remarks regarding the lack of research that it is unjustifiable on the 16th to the 17th of August 2023, and this is not excusable. The DBE should have conducted meaningful research on the home education sector prior to wanting to regulate it. During and after the PCB level, only two of the draft provincial reports that were deliberated upon have been found on the Parliamentary Monitoring Government website. These draft reports, all nine of them, were deliberated upon and adopted in the and consolidated into the revised national report. So logically, never mind constitutionally, these reports should be available to the public upon request. This is a clear indication of failed communication and the meaningful engagement with the stakeholders. The home education community was not consulted in a meaningful way. Many from the home education community were excluded from any consultations referred to in the PCBE deliberations, whether by intimidation or greed. The DBE could not have communicated with, in the very least, the home education parents that have been registered with the DBE to date. The DBE has not communicated with these registered homeschoolers. The home education community, consisting of many parents, were not made aware of by the DBE that the Bellable, as well as the policy on home education, would have such an impact on its community. No communication and no public participation awareness education was conducted directly with them. The DBE assumed that it had communicated to the entire home education community, yet unfortunately it had not. I would like to bring to your attention of the PCBE meetings, Annexure 1, the matrix of submissions that were made to the Bellable, as per my written submission on page 7. It is quite clear by this graph that the then Clause 37 on home education was rejected. It was an outright rejection. This matrix indicates that the home education sector does not support this bill, even at PCBE level. Furthermore, information regarding this can be obtained from the Dear South Africa presentation and report by Mr. Rob Hutchinson. As per the 8th of August 2023, the Bellable that was presented at the National Public Hearings Report with the Deputy Minister states, the purpose of the amendments to legislation is to change the wording and the scope of the law. Why is the Bellable being amended? One of the mentionings is the criminalization of parents who do not ensure that their children are in school, as well as encouraging homeschooled learners to be registered. Please have a look at Clause 1G and see that the overregulation of just this section does not encourage homeschool learners to be registered. And this is only in the definition section, clause 2, that will criminalize parents, does not encourage homeschool learners to be registered. As a home educating parent of about 10 years who is registered with the Gauteng Department of Education and has experienced a very positive relationship since registering, I would like to point out that the additional documents sent to us those many years ago were administratively burdening then, and on top of clause 35, the additional documents that will be required for home education registration and the phase assessment now will be unacceptably administratively burdening. Homeschooling was illegal under apartheid, and parents who wished to homeschool their children then believed that that was in their children's best interests. They were imprisoned and their children were sent to orphanages. Democracy in South Africa has made homeschooling legal. Article 20 of the Bajul Charter 1990 provides for parental responsibilities, stating that parents or other persons responsible for a child shall have the primary responsibility for the upbringing and development of the child. Parents who homeschool their children and or use the services of a homeschool tuition center or cottage school perform a massive social service and an enormous financial benefit to the state, financially and administratively. Pardon me. In 2017, it was stated by FORSA in their written submission for the Bellable that approximately 57,000 children from the public schooling system are otherwise home educated. In Dr. R. Van Roop's recently released report in December 2023, a report named the Report of National Research on Home Education in South Africa states that there are approximately 300,000 home-educated children in South Africa. This research report is the most up-to-date research available to South African legislative decision makers. It is highly recommended that since no research whatsoever can be found from the Department of Basic Education, unfortunately, on home education and homeschooling, as supported in the SIA, that this report please be looked at.
Excuse me, may you flight your presentation, please, sir? Or is it only me who is not seeing what you are talking to?
My apologies, Chair. I don't have a presentation. I am a home educating parent, and I did not have the time to put an entire presentation together. However, my written submission contains all this information that I am reading out to you. May I continue, please?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. There has been a substantial increase in homeschooling since 2017, from around 50,000 to about 300,000. It is estimated that a budget of between 16,000 rand to 22,000 rand per child is allocated to educate a child in the public schooling sector, irrespective of the quality of education that they receive. Yet 57,000 homeschool learners in 2017 saved the state just under 1 billion rand per year. This is a conservative amount of 16,000 rand per child per year. If we take that same amount into 2023 and there are 300,000 learners, the home education sector has saved the South African government a whopping 5 billion rand per year, as you can see on page 12 of my written submission. South Africa spends approximately 7% of the GDP on education. This translates to about 300 billion rand per year. If you take these numbers, you will see that approximately 15 billion rand is then saved because home educating parents fund the costs of their own children being educated over and above paying taxes. Hugely contradictory, the Bellable states on page 48 under the heading of financial implications for the state that home educating parents should pay for home education assessments per phase. Unfortunately, these costs seem to be calculated on a senior learner phase and not on basic education as stated by the billable. These costs are also rather incorrect. Unfortunately, as already stated, this assessment phase cost is not covered in the definition of basic education, but it is at FET phase. This is an additional financial burden on the home educating parents and is not a financial burden on the state. It seems to be suggested that homeschoolers need to comply with the National Curriculum Statement, which is currently CAPS, as per Clause 35, Section 51(2), Number 3 of the Bill. There is no definition for the word predominantly. This could be any percentage. The inclusion of the phrase covers the acquisition of content, results in parents having to have a curriculum that at least covers the content of state-chosen curriculum. This limits the freedom of parents who are entitled to choose from the wide variety of international and South African curriculum, as per shown in my video in the beginning, that is available to us. This shows us that we who wish to educate our children according to Article 18 of the Bajul Charter of 1990 and who on religious grounds according to the Constitution of South Africa 1996, Section 15, should have the freedom to decline certain content that is contained in the National Curriculum Statement of CAPS. State assessment of homeschooled children's progress. It also imposes a financial burden and additional obligation and or requirements of homeschooling parents that it does not impose on parents who send their children to public or private schools. It is therefore open to a challenge of unfair discrimination according to the South African Constitution, Section 9, as well as the Equality Act. According to Clause 30, I would like to end off by stating my conclusion and my recommendations. I have already stated that I reject and majority of the homeschoolers reject Clause 1, 2, 6, and 35. I recommend that you remove home education from the public school arena, the SASSA of 1996. However, home education remains legal in South Africa. This is to be done so that home education is not discriminated against in terms of it obtaining the same status as that of IEB or independent schools. A separate act should be proposed to regulate home education. This act must consist of representatives and associations from all provinces. Representative associations and home education parents must include those who are not part of the consultations to date. These consultation meetings and processes must be open to all home education parents and associations and must be conducted in a manner that is fair and non-discriminatory towards all home schooling families. Current research must be taken into account. The DBE is required to undertake research and conduct a formal survey that will not jeopardize those families not yet registered. It should not incriminate the homeschool families that have not registered to date either. Other supporting forms of alternative education, such as online learning, micro and cottage schools, etc., should be included within this new act. I thank you for your time, Chairperson, and the NCOP Select Committee. I hope that my feedback comes to you with the right amount of respect and care that I have for this home education community.
No, thank you. Board members, are there clarification questions on the presentation? Let me just check this on the platform if there is any raised hand. I cannot see any any request to speak. Thank you. Thank you very much, Evan. The committee will have a sitting and make their own determination. And obviously, the meetings, our meetings are in the public domain. So you would be able to follow the deliberations of the committee.
Thank you, sir.
And just to assure you that we don't check a quorum for everybody who speaks, but the quorum is checked at the beginning of the meeting. But when a member requests that we should check the quorum before she makes his or her input, we'll gladly do that. Thank you very much. Honourable members, that is the Nolitando, I thought we skipped another large school presentation. Did we? Or did we finally it is not marked on my paper, so on my page, so I thought we Martin Pretorius, I think he did make a presentation from
Mr. Pretorius, he's still not on the platform, Chair.
He's still not on the platform?
No.
Okay. So what do? We forget about him, that we just say that we couldn't get hold of him. Did you try to call him or?
Yes, Chair. No, I couldn't get hold of him.
All right, in the light of that information, we tried to get hold of Mr. Mr. Martin Pretorius from Lyre School, General Albert Primary School. But anyway, let me take this opportunity to thank all people who responded to the invite and availed themselves to make a presentation representing the organization. And the last person who was representing her own self. So we thank you all for having made your, you know, time to talk to us. We value your efforts to help us, you know, look deeper into the basic education in our country. We've talked about a lot of things, from infrastructure to, you know, to guiding schools also, you know. All that went into the presentation, and we thank you so much for having made that. Honourable members, let me just check with Nolitando. Meskaka, is there some other thing that we need to discuss in this before I close the meeting, this hearing?
No, Chair.
In the absence of any other issue on the agenda, thank you very much. And our meetings are always open to the public. And you will be able to follow how the discussions will go forward from here. Thank you very much. And this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson.